This is the June 8th, 2023 regular meeting of the Stanford Community Resource Group, 6:30 p.m.
Good.
The meeting would be recorded. Thank you for coming, everybody. Good to see you all. And welcome. Okay, so let's get started. Thank you for coming to the Stanford Community Resource Group meeting this evening. I'm Charu Aluwalia, Senior Planner, Campus Program Manager, and we also have our county consultant from MPRU. This is Brittany Bendek, she's a Principal Planner. And we have Christina Lopez from Supervisor Median's office. And today we have one big item on the agenda, which is mainly a report out on the Stanford Community Plan update. So we can, before we get to that, let's do a roll call. So item one on the agenda is roll call, and I'll be doing that now. So first, Alice Kaufman.
Here.
Arushi Gupta. Betsy Nash.
Here.
Edla Wing.
Yes, here.
Jim Sweeney.
Here.
Olivia Fu. Peter Dreckmeyer.
Here.
Priya Grave.
Here.
Tom Lasik. Great, we have a quorum. Okay, so next item on the agenda is public comment. If anyone wishes to address the CRG and speak on a topic not on the agenda, please raise your hands. Okay, seeing none, let's move on. So yes, now right into our main item for today evening's meeting. This is the report on the Stanford Community Plan update. We have a brief presentation that Brittany will be providing to the group, after which we will be opening the floor for public comments. And that would be including Stanford, if Stanford representatives have any comments to share with the CRG. And after which we will get into Q&A with the CRG members. Okay, Brittany.
Good evening, everybody. Again, I'm Brittany Bendix. I'm a principal planner with M Group. This is my first in-person community group meeting, so it's really nice to see everybody in person for the first time. I'm sure I recognize a lot of you from some of the hearings we've had, public testimony, and so I really appreciate that. The purpose tonight is to give you an update on all of the progress we've made on the SCP since our last public meeting back in December with the Board of Supervisors. So the outline for tonight is a brief background on what happened at that meeting, and then some general updates relative to specific chapter policy updates and revisions, and then finally we'll conclude with a list of some next steps. So as a reminder, the last time anyone saw the SCP publicly and the proposed revisions was at the Board of Supervisors meeting on December 13th, 2022. Staff was asking the board to receive a report relating to the final recommended SCP updates and declaring the administration to the administration that the recommended SCP update is the proposed project for the purpose of CEQA, and direct the administration to complete the EIR and take other necessary actions to submit the plan to the board for final consideration and adoption in 2023. Was are a bit out of order. The second point I wanted to make were some specific directives from the board in addition to those actions. First was to respond to the City of Palo Alto. The Palo Alto Unified School District, PAUSD, and the County of San Mateo on certain items. Additionally, report on circulation chapter revisions, as well as College Terrace neighborhood traffic impacts. To ensure transparency in the permit streamlining process, coordinate with Stanford on reporting metrics, for example, behavioral health, and to provide revisions to the housing chapter regarding the jobs and housing balance. So part of the reason we're here tonight providing an update to you is because we are anticipating presenting to the Housing, Land Use, Environmental, and Transportation Committee of the Board this June on the 29th. And in that hearing, we will be providing a staff report that that covers responses to the directives of the Board of Supervisors, which I just summarized previously. It will include revisions that reflect the ongoing conversations we've had with Stanford on some of these specific policies. And then we've also included some general cleanup to the policies and narrative sections of the SDP, just for added clarification and transparency on some items that have come up. So tonight I'll be going through the specific chapters and giving you a sense of what you can expect to hear at the June 29th HELIP meeting. So the first one is the introduction chapter. We are providing greater clarification on the key findings that were listed in the introduction that were taken from the informational studies. Some of the key findings were taken verbatim from the studies and others were paraphrased. We're cleaning that up and we're making sure that it's really transparent on where those findings came from. Moving on to chapter one, growth and development. There was some requests to clarify the term of academic use. If you go back and you look at the 1985 land use agreement, that really does encompass both academic support, and housing. So we wanted to go through the entire SDP and make sure that we're doing that consistently throughout. I've put that under chapter one, but I'll flag it as something that you would see in the revisions that we send to HELIP throughout the document. The next item I want to highlight is that we are working on the municipal services study recommendations, which required an organizational chart, service and performance metrics reported on a regular basis, as well as customer feedback surveys. We're working with Stanford to really identify how this information is shared and looking at all of the specific metrics that were required across all of the service areas to make sure that the reporting makes sense. We also want to make sure that the reporting is done in a way that is publicly accessible and available. So you'll see that in the HELIP staff report. Moving on to chapter two for land use, we've added some clarification relative to the permitted uses in lands outside of the AGB. This is really to just make sure that it's transparent how it aligns with the requirements of the zoning code. Second to that, there was discussion in December about the specific future public school site location. So we are summarizing the correspondence that we've had with the Palo Alto Unified School District. That was put into testimony at the hearing. So we want to make sure, especially because it made it into the minutes, that we're accurately reflecting what we told the board previously. And then we're updating figure 2.3, which is for development districts. It's a map that we've provided to identify the Stanford golf course. So it's really clear that the expectation is the school site is outside of the boundaries of the golf course. So chapter three for housing, this is slide one of two. At the request of Supervisor Lee, we have revised the text or revised the chapter to include or retain text that previously discussed the jobs housing imbalance in specifically the Mid-Peninsula region and to update current conditions so that it tracks with what the census data currently says. We also added some clarification relative to the county's concerns regarding the reduction of housing opportunities when Stanford pursues off-campus housing solutions. Excuse me. That had come up with in discussion with Stanford, and we wanted to make sure that the concerns that the county had were clearly reflected in the narrative of that chapter. The second slide for housing, we had included some policies that were taken from the Graduate Student Council's Bill on Affordability, and one of them referenced a study for use in terms of preparing future studies. We wanted to be really transparent and clear on what the type of analysis would be in that future analysis. So we created some alignment with the county's graduate student housing affordability study, which basically specifies housing affordability, food insecurity, child care, and any other cost of living. Second, for relative to permit streamlining, we provided additional clarification of the public participation points during the permit streamlining process, and we're providing an update on the objective design standards process in terms of creating that. Moving on to chapter 4, which is circulation. We touched on some clarification in the narrative relative to parking, that on-campus housing residents do not require commute-related parking. That was a little confusing. And then for Stanford Transportation Demand Management Programs, or TDM programs, we received additional information from Stanford so we could update the current TDM programs that they offer. And then relative to traffic and College Terrace, we're having ongoing discussions to identify congestion reduction and public engagement opportunities on that topic. And so we'll be providing the HULIP committee an update on that topic. Chapter 5, relative to open space. There was some clarification of the intent to protect academic uses from impacts related to recreational activities and public access. Currently, the way the chapter is written, it really only protects the facilities, but the use can actually extend beyond the facility, and so we wanted to make sure that that was transparent. Chapter 6 dealt with resource and conservation. Here we have substantial updates relative to habitat and biodiversity. That was one section of this chapter, really to provide clarification in the discussion of Stanford's habitat conservation plan to update species designations and current habitat conditions. And that was looked at by specialists from both Stanford and the county. And then we have updates to maps that were provided in the historic structures and sites section of this chapter. And that was really done to improve legibility. If you look at the maps that were provided in the December version, they're really hard to read and identify specific buildings that are important. So we wanted to zoom that in and make it really clear and obvious. Finally, with chapter 7, health and safety, we edited the suicide prevention section to clarify a focus on suicide reduction. We also edited the renewable energy section to revise updated information that we received from Stanford relative to the current programs. And then with the health and safety reporting policies that we had added to the SEP for the December meeting, we are looking at potential revisions to that pending the ongoing Chapter 1 discussions about municipal services reporting. So that concludes my summary. The next big kind of update that I wanted to share with this group is that we are anticipating the release of the public draft EIR that would cover both the SEP and the housing element very soon. So I've listed the Community Plan Updates website here. We will most certainly post a link to where the public draft EIR is shared, and I would encourage you to take a look at it. The HULIT meeting, again, is June 29th, 2023, and then we are still on track for the adoption process occurring this fall and winter. And that completes my presentation. Chiara, can we open it for questions?
Yes, so thanks, Brittany. Before questions, I would like to open for public comments. So any members of the public, I know that there's some students from Stanford that are not on the CRG. If there's any public comment, this would be the time to address the CRG with any comments you have. You can raise your hand.
We're mostly just here to listen.
Yeah, no
graduating.
Okay, wonderful. To the Stanford representatives, if you would like to share any comments at this time, or maybe when questions come from the CRG, at that time, would like to.
Just wanted to say thanks for the comprehensive presentation and a couple questions. Can we get a copy of the slides? That would be great because it's a lot of information. Thank you so much for going through all of it. And secondly, do you anticipate sharing the draft EIR prior to HULIP?
Yes.
Is that right?
Okay. I put very soon because we're days away, and I don't want to commit to one day and then have it be 2 days later. Yes?
Charu, would it be possible to notify everyone who's on the Stanford Interested Party list about the availability of the EIR when it is publicly available?
Yes, absolutely.
Good idea.
Great, thank you.
So if you're not, for those new people here, if you're not on that list, you can, Arushi, do you know how to tell them how to get on?
No.
I'll find a call.
Thank you.
Great. Okay, so we can now move to comments and questions by the CRG members. Please feel free to jump in, raise your hand, or okay. So we can just start with Alice.
Yeah. When will the actual text changes that you made or are making to the draft 3D plan, will those be available?
Taro, how far in advance does the packet get published?
It would be a week prior.
Okay, so it'll be for the
community. Yeah.
Okay.
And the way that I thank you for asking that, because I do want to make sure everyone is aware that when we do publish the staff report, it will include a track changes version of the SEP from December forward. So you know what the most recent changes are, and they're very obvious when they pop out to you. And then there will also be an attachment of a clean version.
Procedurally, when these documents are available, will you send out a link to the committee? So, it sounds like you don't know specifically the date, so it'd be good if we could get a link.
Yeah, absolutely. So the release of the draft EIR as well as the Hewlett report material.
Yeah.
Sure. Can I ask a question on your chapter 5, on the back of that slide, in terms of, it's kind of a different way than we think about things in the city, where you're protecting, as I understand it, academic uses from recreational impacts. And we usually think of it the other way. We don't want the recreational facilities impacted by the housing and stuff. Could you give me an example of what that might be?
Sure. So I will say that the SEP includes what you're describing as kind of the traditional expectation of protecting natural resources from activities. This would be if Stanford had a research garden. That's not an actual facility. The garden is not a structure, but it could be a use. And so we would want to make sure that there was maybe proper signage to indicate that people who were passing on a trail nearby don't go through the garden.
I thought you were going to ask about pickleball.
You need a lot of those courses.
Get a quiet pickleball.
I'm a somewhat different topic. Within the community plan, there is the neighborhood protection district that has been counties put together for Upper San Juan area. Carla has proposed a lawsuit against that. What is the status of that legal action?
Yeah, I would have to, get back to you on that. I need to check in with the county council. They're the lead on the response to the lawsuit, so I don't have information pertaining to that specific to our discussion topic today, but I can definitely circle back.
I understand the hearing is scheduled for shortly, sometime this month. But often there's preliminary discussions before the hearing. So if you can come back with some information, I would appreciate it.
Sure. I would like to get that as well.
Certainly. Okay. I'll make a note of that. And questions from Arushi and Olivia?
All right, I was going to say we'd also like to get an update about the
Bethany.
Could you put slide 9 back up, please?
So on the housing opportunities, the revisions to clarify the county's concerns, if you could include San Mateo County in addition to Santa Clara County, we also have concerns about the reduction of housing opportunities.
You have that? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, Priya, would you like to share anything?
Not really. I've been kind of out of touch for about the last 6 weeks. I've basically been housebound. So I don't really know what's going on at the moment, I'm afraid. I promise to be back on deck next time.
Well, again, there hasn't been a lot of public discussion about the SCP since December. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is an opportunity to flag there's a new opportunity coming.
College Terrace always talks about this.
Yeah.
So, I know that that's still a really big concern in the neighborhood as to whether perhaps Stanford bought the 13 little cottages. We don't know. And somebody seems to be able to find that out. Stanford continues to acquire more property in College Terrace, it appears. We keep being told that that's sort of winding down, but it doesn't seem to be.
Okay.
So, yeah, and we talk about it all the time. I'm just out of the loop at the moment because
okay.
I've been housebound and trying to work on a tiny iPad.
Okay, well, you know, once you get back up to speed, feel free to jot down the latest and greatest for Charlie and I.
Okay.
I never quite understood this. Maybe I could get educated a little. With Stanford having a given number of employees who could rent houses or buy houses elsewhere, what is the fundamental difference between Stanford buying it and providing housing for them and them going out and providing it in terms of the ability of anybody else to have housing opportunities?
I think that the issue that we're trying to highlight here is when Stanford is the immediate property owner.
If I can address that briefly. The house next door to me is owned by Stanford. It is ground leased to a faculty member. As far as I am aware, it will never, ever, ever again be available to a member of the general public to purchase it. And that does make a big difference because they own a lot of property in College Terrace. We have a history of having a lot of people of different employments other than Stanford faculty living in the neighborhood, and we don't object to Stanford faculty living there, but it's nice to be able to know that someday down the line it might become available again.
But if that same Stanford faculty member bought it himself or herself and then lived in it and passed it on to their children, how would that be different?
It's the possibility. There's
still going to have as many children and
There's a couple of different things. I mean, one thing is I don't know the details on this, and perhaps the Stanford folks can answer that, but my understanding is that when the faculty member dies, their spouse can live there for some period of time, but not forever. Whereas we have a spouse of a former Stanford faculty member who lives in her own house in College Terrace. He's long gone. And she can continue to stay there and give it to her kids. So it is a bit different.
Okay, I just don't understand how that changes the opportunity for anybody else living in housing.
Well, at some point our house will be sold.
Mm-hmm.
And it will not be sold to a Stanford person necessarily.
Okay, I'm just dense about how that changes the number of opportunities, given the number of people who are out there, in fact, renting or living there.
Well,
okay, thank you. You can go on.
It does the revisions that you're talking about get into this? Does it explain what the issue is and clarify it relative to any kind of policy changes or any land use changes?
The policies and programs are not changing relative to this issue. It's just in the discussion, and it's just to be a little bit more direct.
The other thing is, when Stanford buys them, they tend to tear them down and replace them with houses that don't necessarily suit our neighborhood.
Well, that's happened.
Yeah, I've got to say that. Yeah, I've seen so many streets in Palo Alto.
Nobody else has bought anything in College Terrace for years.
Okay.
So.
Essentially, it just takes a number of houses out of the general availability that anyone who might be working locally as well, who also wants to not have a large, you know, a long commute, can have access to. And in addition, even though there was an explanation about tax rolls for Stanford faculty houses, I still think that there is a difference to our cities as to how much tax into our counties, how much tax actually goes into the county's coffers, the city's coffers, when there is an underlying ground lease.
So is that the issue, the tax collection, rather than the change in the opportunities for people to have housing?
I would say primarily it's the change in the opportunities. We have a tremendous housing shortage right now. And I understand, I think what you're saying is that people are out there, so they may be buying the same houses anyway.
Yeah.
But it's just, they're targeted, they're only available to a certain population as opposed to anyone.
So, Jim, I don't want to speak for the county here, but my understanding is that specifically the county's concern is that as Stanford adds more academic space and creates more jobs, the county is asking Stanford to provide housing for the people who will come and take those jobs on Stanford land, as opposed to Stanford saying, well, we're going to make housing available for those people by purchasing housing that's out there in the community in other cities. And those other cities are saying you are reducing the opportunities for our existing residents to find housing.
Right. I can understand the argument that the county is trying to force Stanford to build more homes on campus. That would, in fact, create more opportunities.
Right.
Only for a given number of homes on campus, you can't buy things off campus. I just don't get it. So.
Well, I think difference between saying you can buy homes off campus and having homes that are already reserved for Stanford only.
It's a bit different. And she's right. The county assessor has addressed largely the tax imbalance. The tax imbalance used to be huge. The Stanford faculty members were paying tax based on what they paid for the ground lease, which was typically about half of what the property was worth. The assessor has changed that procedure and now does assess based on what the market value of the property at the time of the sale, not the purchase price at the time of the sale. There's also the fact that Stanford actually bought an entire apartment building just as it was being completed, and there were people signed up waiting to get into those apartments, and suddenly they were told, no, this now belongs to Stanford. So that is definitely a case where the housing opportunities for others were diminished. And that's not the ground lease issue. That's just an outright purchase of an apartment building within weeks of when it was supposed to be ready for occupancy.
And we have apartment complexes in Menlo Park where people who were not Stanford students were living. Now it's Stanford students only. And on one hand, yes, we absolutely welcome Stanford students, right, faculty, everybody. But on the other hand, these were some of the more affordable apartments, and they were also very close to town, and now they are not available to the general public, to people working downtown, to all of these other folks who really also need housing.
So with the higher unit quotas that you have, Palo Alto has, that takes units out of that inventory. Mm-hmm. And you have to add
more units
on top of the unit allocations to actually get back to ground zero.
Yep. I didn't realize it took them out of RENA.
No, sorry. No, I retract that. It takes them out of the jump.
The jobs housing.
It aggravates the jobs housing
balance. Right. Yes.
Because you're adding jobs and not providing more housing.
Right. So I wouldn't be able to buy there, for instance.
Okay. I just count the numbers of people and the numbers of housing units, and I think of an imbalance is based on the number of people who are employed and want to work here versus the number of housing units, and rather than who owns it, or whether Hewlett-Packard owns it, or Stanford owns it, or Apple owns it, or whatever, it's still the number of people and the number of workplaces. But I see that you people tend to view it differently than
I
see.
We have a lot of neighbors who are not Stanford affiliates. We have no objection, as she says, to the Stanford affiliates. But I have a neighbor across the street who's a musician. I have another neighbor who has been retired since before she bought her house. Another neighbor who is a retired physical therapist. None of those people could own those houses if they belonged to Stanford.
Or rent. We're talking past each other.
It's a different kind of diversity.
Well, yeah.
Or rent.
Yeah, that too. I mean, we have tremendous needs for our city staff just for more affordable or
less unaffordable.
Less unaffordable. Yep.
It
is just taking
the matter is to the extent that Stanford is creating more jobs. Hospital was that 400 graduate students or whatever. That's just more folks that have to live somewhere.
That logic I accept and I agree with and understand how that works. It's just for a given number of jobs and a given number who owns the house doesn't do much difference in supply and demand.
It's partially the deep pockets phenomenon. I mean, Stanford has extremely deep pockets.
As opposed to the high-tech community around here.
Well, again, many of the people are not high-income, and these are often properties that are in a more affordable
condition. They're somewhat dilapidated, and therefore the price on them is lower. And so then Stanford comes in and snaps them up, and then they get rebuilt, and
we have ones that were not dilapidated, they're just not high-end, and they're not getting rebuilt, but they're just taking it out of circulation.
Older housing stock tends to be more affordable.
And I don't know whether San Mateo County has the same arrangement on the ground leases. I don't know that they don't, but I don't know that they do. If anyone...
For the taxation.
I can't answer that.
It
is the same for across the state?
Absolutely.
It's so complicated.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I understand that it doesn't
budget.
Look like it's causing a problem, but half your neighbor starts to feel like a problem.
I think, Arushi, you wanted to ask a question.
Yeah. I was curious about the Nexus study and sort of related to this. I was wondering what the geographic reach of that is going to be. Is it just going to be San Jose County, or is it also going to be San Mateo County, or even further than that?
Let me consult the SCP copy. It's been a while since I looked at that specifically. I mean, the Nexus study is built on the proposed growth that Stanford is pursuing, and the number of jobs or students that are associated with that. And the SCP is framed to require that any housing that's related to that growth is then constructed on within the SCP area.
Okay. So just to clarify on that, it would be kind of tied to the GUP application, or is it tied to the SCP?
The Nexus study would occur at the GUP application
of it.
But the expectations for the Nexus study are set forth in the SCP.
So with like the question of the boundaries, like that is in the SCP, like Arushi's question would be answered in the SCP, basically.
Yeah, I think what threw me with your question was that you were raising county boundaries. And really, the SCP is just focused on the SCP area. And what we're talking about in terms of opportunities elsewhere isn't addressed in the Nexus study, because the Nexus study is looking just simply at here's the number of people that are going to need accommodations by Stanford's proposed growth, and this is how Stanford's going to meet that within the area.
That makes sense. I think I maybe had a misunderstanding of what the Nexus study is, so I'll ask a more general question, which is that is there some sort of assessment on the affordability in surrounding areas of whatever development happens with the GUP? And if there is some sort of study of the effect on housing prices, is that restricted to Stanford County?
There wouldn't be that analysis required as part of the GUP application, mm-hmm. because the way the SCP frames that review is that any sort of affordability issues will be mitigated by providing housing specifically on the SCP site or within the SCP area. But relative to our point about Stanford working with the Graduate Student Council to really reaffirm the housing study that the Graduate Student Council had prepared or performed, we're trying to flesh out affordable issues there that make it a little bit more clear on what the county's expectation is that study would share. And so that's why we've included this revision, so that we've listed housing affordability and food insecurity and child care, and then we've kind of given some breadth to other costs of living, so that it's not just a general, oh, well, anything works. We want to give Stanford some direction, because if we're asking them to do things, we need to, one, have a metric to look at whether or not they've performed, and two, give them some guidance and direction so that they're not guessing and it's not a mystery mastery situation.
And that makes sense, and I think it would be great if, as part of that process, we could look at where folks already live, just because anecdotally we know people who are graduate students or people who work at Stanford who live in like Tracy, and then also like a lot of people who like recently moved into like Palo Alto and Redwood City, and so just anticipating that there's housing price effects there that maybe would not be captured by just looking at the Stanford campus.
Okay. You make sure I have the picture.
So I have a question following up on that. So Stanford is definitely expanding into Redwood City, well, Menlo Park, Redwood City, Belmont. Are those going to be captured, or is that because it's in San Mateo County?
Correct. Because it's in San Mateo County, those would not be captured. Because are you asking about the affordability study?
Or all of the different pieces, very honestly.
Sure. Because we're in the county, we have to focus on the county. We do make specific references to the City of Palo Alto because they're part of the tri-party agreement that really creates the framework to build the SCP on. So when we are looking at the Nexus study, right, it's really, again, just how many people are going to need housing based on the proposed development, and then requiring that there's actual housing built on campus to accommodate that. So there is a requirement for housing that has to be met in the county on the community plan area, but there's nothing that says Stanford can't separately, because they want to, go out and buy housing somewhere else.
But the fact that they have significant workplaces in these other cities is not captured, because it is strictly focused on Santa Clara County. And so is there any perspective on what's going on in San Mateo County as Stanford expands more and more to the north? Or is that probably... a question for
that all. Is not captured specifically in the discussion of the housing chapter. What is looked at is there is acknowledgement that the faculty and students live in the region. And that acknowledgement is really to provide justification for the on-campus housing policy. But there is also reference to the jobs housing imbalance regionally, again, to add justification for that requirement. And that's one of the reasons why I think Supervisor Lee asked that we add back in the mid-peninsula specific language so that we can capture kind of more immediately what's going on, not just focus on the broader region or the city of Palo Alto, which was what was previously in the chapter.
Is Stanford Hospital, because that's in the city of Palo Alto, right? So is that, does that get captured in this at all?
Do you remember?
Captured with the
in the
assessment.
SEP area.
Yeah. It would be outside of the
So we have the same, problem as with the Redwood City facility.
Yeah. Because it's not within the jurisdiction of the county. So
it's a bigger issue, and I think at some point we're going to need to find a way of, you know, raising the umbrella, because there's a lot of Stanford that is not in the county of Santa Clara anymore. Need to look at the whole picture.
Although Stanford Hospital is, so it's not.
But it's in Palo Alto, so it's not county land.
Got it.
This
Thank
only
you.
Deals with
Got
county
it.
Land.
Okay.
Maybe the city district commissioner has studied jointly.
As long as they fund it.
We'll let Redwood City do that.
Okay. What's tonight on?
Yes?
That is a problem.
Yeah. For the future affordability studies, does it talk about what those affordability studies would inform?
It would inform Stanford and the county and the public generally on what the state of graduate affordability is.
I think I meant more like when would they happen? Because there was an affordability study that happened as like a part of informing like the SCP.
Mm-hmm.
Is it saying like that the kind of input from the Graduate Student Council would go into the next affordability study that would happen with the GUP or with the future SCP or just like regularly? Is there any sense of like when the study?
It's not a strict requirement. It's an encouragement that Stanford and the GSC work together to do an affordability study, a future one. I will say that informing the Graduate Student Housing Affordability Study was input from both Stanford and a collection of graduate students. I would imagine that there was some coordination with GSC there, but I don't know for sure. I do know that there was a graduate student survey. So that might be something that as the GSC and Stanford continue to build a relationship in this area. We look at how that survey performed and whether or not enough students really were able to provide information to it.
I was mostly wondering if those studies were actually like completely like tied to anything, but it sounds like they're just recommendations to like do these studies.
Yeah, there are recommendations. The language that we're talking about here really came from the Graduate Student Council as part of the affordability bill and was added right before the December meeting. Prior to that, we had released the findings of the county's Graduate Student Housing Affordability Study. That's such a mouthful. Which is on our website if you wanted to take a look at it. It does have a substantial areas of analysis, and we did what we could to tie as many recommendations from the study into the SEP.
And I just have another quick question on I think it was chapter 7 on the health, with the language around like suicide reduction. Was that like a change from suicide prevention, or can you talk about kind of why that choice was made?
Sure, this was a change from suicide prevention to reduction. to acknowledge that Stanford can't just, that there isn't an expectation of Stanford to just completely eliminate prevention, or sorry, to eliminate the number of suicides.
Oh, so you're saying the implication of prevention is that there shouldn't be any. You're preventing them.
Well, we're at this point trying to reduce them.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, so I feel like I don't see kind of, like if you're trying to prevent them, then that would also lead to reduction. And this just seems like, why isn't prevention the goal?
These are semantics.
Goal zero. The goal should be zero, even if there isn't.
I think that, I mean, suicide prevention is a fairly common term. And people know what that means. You know, it doesn't mean.
Well, it depends on what the specific policies are that you're pursuing.
We'll get to find out.
Just a different take relative to this housing issue. It seems to me that in the local jurisdictions, that if Stanford is controlling the land and they're getting a tax break, the probability of them keeping costs for housing down would be important relative to your RENA numbers. So I would think there would be good discussions with Stanford if you have substantial housing stock that Stanford controls within your community as you're trying to address your RENA numbers, because your numbers of affordability housing may go up with Stanford there. I know in Portola Valley, there have been a lot of work with Stanford on what is called the Stanford Wedge to come up with a plan to meet their RENA numbers. So it seems to me that there's some good conversations that can be had. I don't know if it's all one way or another, but I would think that it would be important to have some good conversation to see how it plays out with these insane housing element numbers. That's a personal reaction.
No, that's a technical term.
Did your presentation cover the academic growth boundary and the extension, the 99-year extension?
No, at this point we're not proposing any changes to that, as it was presented in December.
Okay, so that's still in there, it's just...
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
I keep asking.
Okay. You didn't change it to 199 years?
Just write in a one.
Thank you for all the work you've put into this. You must be relieved that the submission date is soon, and then you can move on to the next phase of this. It goes to Hewlett, and then when will it come to the Planning Commission, do you think?
I think we're still working on, well, so this is just a study session. There's no formal action being taken. I should clarify that at the beginning, but I want to make sure everybody's aware that this is not a step that has to be taken. It's really to just kind of refresh everybody's memory of what's going on before we head into the fall and start actually working on the adoption process. Plus, I think it's a good reminder of what's in the SEP, given that the EIR is about to come out, so that you have some sort of sense of where we were, where we are right now. We are hoping to do a Planning Commission study session. I don't have a specific date for that. That would probably happen between now and the fall. And we are looking at doing another multi-jurisdictional meeting that has yet to be scheduled. But then leading up through the adoption process, this will have to go back to Planning Commission and the full board.
Is this the only time that Hewlett will hear this, or will...
We'll see how Hewlett responds. Christina. I don't want to say no, but they're not a procedural step in the adoption process at this point, so we don't have to go back to them. A lot of these are small nuanced changes. Some of them merit longer discussions, so we'll see what happens.
So is the housing element also going to continue it on June 29th? Are these there?
I'm not sure. Do you know?
Because I assume once, I mean, all of the EIR process, you know, the public comment workshops or whatever you might do. I mean, that's obviously for both, you know, joint.
Right.
So they're pretty much hitched together.
I do know that when we go through the adoption process, the expectation is that the housing element and the SCP will be going together in separate items, but at the same time. I don't know if Hula's getting an update on the housing element.
I can follow up on that and, you know, sure, give some updates.
Yeah, I think it's unlikely because the housing element has come through Hewlett and the board, and we're not talking about the EIR, which is the part that's joined. We're just talking about changes to the SCP since December. So I would be surprised if there was any linkage to the housing element at the June
And then that the EIR is its own kind of public release process with the comment period and whatnot. So, you know how long the comment period is for the CIR? Okay.
Sort of depends on the findings that we see.
It's either 45 or 90 days.
I think it's 45 days.
45, thank you.
Yep. Yeah. There's no other way if they're going to meet the October 17th board meeting date. It has to be.
What's the date you just dropped? October
17th is the currently scheduled date. However, the schedule is always subject to amendment.
That is based on releasing of the public draft EIR in June, which is very likely going to happen. So I do think that that's realistic.
Did you have a question?
Yeah, I have another question about the affordability study. In the earlier study that was in fall 2021, there was an effort to include service workers in the affordability assessments. I was wondering if that will also be reflected in the recommendation going forward for affordability assessments, and if it isn't, would it be possible to have that?
I'm not sure, but we can certainly look at that.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think just adding on that, there's like a lot of like the language in the SCP where it's like postgraduate fellows, staff, other workers, like if those recommendations of the GSD on affordability are including graduate workers, and if we could also add those other classifications too, of the postgraduate fellows, other workers.
Okay.
So any additional questions? Any comments from Stanford? Alex,
can I ask a question of the Stanford folks? Just
yeah, sure.
I mean, I guess.
Gotta be polite, though.
You don't have to answer. can you provide any update on whether Stanford is ready to pursue to pick back up or to pursue a new gut process? Is there any word on that at this point?
We are waiting for this process to be done, and then we'll.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, so if no further questions, we could conclude this meeting. I have noted the number of information that we need to provide regarding the
Hewlett. You'll be busy.
The Hewlett June 29th meeting, and also additional information about housing element, EIR, as well as the EIR. So I've got that. So thank you all again for joining today. We conclude this meeting, and the next meeting is on September 14, 2023. It'll be at 6:30 p.m. the same venue. So we'll see you all there. Thank you for joining.
Thank you.
Thank you. This was really helpful.